Okay, we're starting here from the Mishnah in the middle of Samach Vav and Aleph. The Mishnah is continuing with the Avodah of the Kohen Gadol and Yom HaKippurim. We had just finished up the Hazaot inside. Now he comes out to the Seir LaZazel. So Balo Eitzel Seir Mishtaleach, which was left near Samoch LeMekomo. Discussed that before in the Mishnayot, that they used to set up the Seir LaShem in one location, the Seir LaMishtaleach in another location. And Seir Mishtaleach was near the doorway where it was to be taken out. Sumech Shtei Yadav Alav. And he puts his two hands on it. That's Michal Mitvodeh. Here's the Vidoy. V'kach Haya Omer. And this is what he says. Ana Hashem. Now again, here, the Gerson of the Mishnah is probably incorrect. It probably should read Avu Pashu Chatu. What we have in the Mishnah is the way that the Chachamim believe it should be done and the way that we do it. But we know that our Mishnah does not follow the position of the Chachamim. We already established that earlier in the Masechta. And therefore, it's likely it should read Ana Hashem Avu Pashu Chatu Lefanecha Amacho Beit Yisrael. Ana, and following again the emendation of Tosafot, that it should be Ana Bashem, Kaper Na. So again, here, the Chataim Lavonot Bishayim is also based on the position of the Chachamim. So it really should be Lavonot Lapishayim Ula Chataim. And again, in the order here, not Shechatu Bavu Pashu, but rather Asher Vu Ve Pashu Ve Chatu Lefanecha. Amcho Beit Yisrael, Kakatu Betrat Moshe Avadech Leimor. כי ביום הזה יחפר עליכם לתר אתכם מכל חטותיכם לפני השם תתארו. Now again here the Gersa has a question if the תתארו comes later like we do in the עבודת יום הכיפורים. הכהנים והעם עומדים בזרק שהיו שומעים את שם המפורש שהיו יוצא מפי כהן גדול היו קוראים ומשתחווים ונופלים על פניהם. When they heard the shem of Rash, they used to bow down and fall, prostrate themselves in the מקדש ואומרים ברוך שם כבוד מלכותו לעולם ועד, all what we discussed earlier in the מסכתא. So the Girsa question is whether this is inserted, the way we have in our Avodat Yom HaKippurim, is this is inserted in between the word Hashem and Titaru. Because they did this during the pronouncement of the Shem Hashem, the ineffable name of Hashem. So that's when they used to bow down. The truth is that it's really a narrative describing what happened at that moment, but not that it's literally inserted in there. It's just describing what the people did while the Kohen Gadol was saying the Shem Hashem. They give it over to the person who was going to take it now out to the tzok, to the cliff. First of all, anybody can do this. There's no requirements in terms of a kohen, a levi, can be anybody. But the practice of the kohanim gedolim was, they only gave it over to kohanim, they didn't give it over to Yisraelim. Rashi says the Beit Din of kohanim reject Israel because it was not the common practice or the accepted practice. Amar Rabbi Yossi Masev Olicho Arsala Mitzipori. I remember that Arsala Mitzipori took it out to the cliff of Yisrael Haya, and he was not a Kohen, but rather Yisrael. So that it's not necessarily true that they didn't allow Yisraelim to do it. The Kevish Asulo Mipnei Bavliim, they built a ramp because of the Babylonians. Shayu Metalshim Bisaro. They used to pick its hair, pull its hair. Ramim Lo Tul Vitzei, Tul Vitzei. Take it and get out. Take it and get out. They were trying to encourage them to leave with all their sins. They didn't want him to tarry. They didn't want him to delay. Whose hair they're pulling is not exactly clear, whether they're pulling the hair of the person that's taking him or of the actual Seir LaZazel. Now, the Gemara says, V'idu, b'nei Aaron, am kedoshecha lo ka'amar. When he says the vidui, he does not say, b'nei Aaron, am kedoshecha lo'amar. Man tano, who's the author of our Mishnah? Am Rabbi Yirmiya, delok Rabbi Yehuda. Must not be like Rabbi Yehuda. Tik Rabbi Yehuda, amar, yesh lem kapara, b'seir ha-mishtaleach. Had a machloket earlier as to where the Kohanim attain their kapara. Do the Kohanim attain their kapara through the seir ha-mishtaleach, or do they attain their kapara through the par of the Kohen Gadol? We agree that by Tumat Mikdash Ukdoshav, that the Kohanim get their kapara through the par, B'nei Yisrael through the Seir LaShem. The question is, by Shara Vunot, where do they get their kapara? And we saw that Machloket earlier, with regards to whether it goes on the Seir Mishlech or the par. So the Gemara is suggesting now that obviously this is not according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that they do attain kapara through the Seir Mishlech, because should have mentioned that. Why aren't they mentioned here in the Vidui? So by Amar, Afilu Tema, Rabbi Yehuda, what type of proof is that? Atu Kohanim, La Beklal, Amcho Yisrael, Ninhu. Here you use a generic term, which is Amcho Yisrael. Amcho Yisrael is not excluding anybody. So the Fanecha, Amcho Beit Yisrael, that includes the Kohanim as well. When you're dealing with the par, where it's the Kohen Gadol, and he's doing it for himself, and his Bayit, then you have to add in the Kohanim besides that, because otherwise they're not included in that phrase or in that terminology. When you talk about the broad terminology of Amcha Beit Yisrael, there's no reason to specifically state the Kohanim separately. So there's no proof from here that the Kohanim are not included here. This is just the generic, everyone in Klal Yisrael. So who's everyone? Everyone, literally. You don't have to delineate the Kohanim separately. When it's the par, then you have to delineate them separately because it's not clear that they're included in what the Kohen Gadol is saying. The words that he uses there are Aniyu Beiti, and Beiti is not clear what the extent of Beiti is. It could be a very narrow definition or a much broader definition. Therefore, he has to add in afterwards the Kohanim, Am Kedoshecha. Misarola Misha Molicho. Tarno Banan, Ish, Lakshira Tezar. So it says, Shalach V'yad Ish Shiti Amidbara. So that Ish that you say over there is any individual literally means any individual. It's not narrow to the Kohen. So the Ish means anybody. Iti, Shehei Mizuman. Comes from the word eight, time, that he has to be prepared ahead of time. He has to be chosen on Erev Yom HaKippurim, who is going to be the individual that takes out the Seir Mishtaleach. Iti, Vafilu B'Shabbat. This is the equivalent of what we call Moado. They do it in its time. So Iti means someone who's designated, but also the designated time. Designated time, even if Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbat. Iti, Vafilu B'Tuma. Even if it's done B'Tuma. Ish, Lachshir Et Azar Pshito. What do you need to tell me that a Zar can take it out? Since it says kapara by it, then maybe it should require a Kohen. Kamash Malan, that it doesn't have that requirement. You would have thought that, what's the point of telling me that you can have a Zar? Of course a Zar can do it. We're not talking about a Voda here. We're not talking about a Voda in the Mikdash. This is all done outside of the Mikdash. So why should there be a requirement of Kohen? So when it says no, because it says kapara, you might have thought it has the trappings of a Voda and would require a Kohen. So Ish comes to tell me that's not the case. Iti, v'afilu b'Shabbat. Iti, it's done in its time, even on Shabbat, the mayuchata. What aloha do you learn from this? Amar Rav Sheshet, lomar, she'im haya chule, makivo al tefo. If it's sick, he carries it on his shoulders. That means, if the Seir is sick, he carries it on his shoulders. He's allowed to carry it even if it's on Shabbat, despite the fact that there's an Isar Hotza'ah on Shabbat. Kiman. Who's this like? Doloki Rabbi Noton. It's Machloki Rabbi Noton and Chachamim in the Gemara on Shabbat. About whether Chai no se et atzmo. Ti Rabbi Noton Omer, Chai no se et atzmo. Rabbi Noton says that a living being carries its own weight. That doesn't mean that it can levitate and move in the air. But if you're carrying a live person or a live animal, they will help or assist you in the movement of their weight or the shifting of their weight. Therefore, you're not considered to be carrying in its fullest sense because they are assisting you, and it's Shnaim Shasu. Because it's Shnaim Shasu, it's no longer Chayav Midoraita, it's only a problem Midit Rabbanan. Now here, if we're talking about the Torah, which is telling us that you can violate Shabbat, obviously you have to have a Torah prohibition over here. And according to Rabbi Natan, there is no Torah prohibition. It says, Afilu Teima Rabbi Natan, Allah, shiny. If it got sick, it's different. When you're talking about a healthy animal, you're talking about a healthy human being, they can shift their weight, they can help you out. But when you're talking about person who's sick, the Gemara is a classic example of someone who's passed away. They're not going to hold their weight for you. They're dead weight, both literally and figuratively. So over here as well, when a person's sick, you have the same thing. Or the animal's sick, they're not going to assist you in carrying the weight. And even Rabbi Natan will agree that it's not chai no se et atzmo here, and therefore there would be a violation of Shabbat, despite the fact you're allowed to do it because you've got to get the seir out to the tzok. There is no Shabbat in this context. Amar Rafram, Zot omeret eruvot za'ah l'Shabbat ve'in eruvot za'ah l'Yom HaKippurim. So from this you must conclude that there is a problem of eruv and otza'ah with regards to Shabbat, but not with regards to Yom HaKippurim. The fact that the Gemara here says that Ish Iti teaches you that Iti afilu b'Shabbat means that the only thing we're worried about is Shabbat and not Yom HaKippurim. If Yom HaKippurim has the same standing as Shabbat, then why aren't we worried about the violation of Yom Kippur when he carries it? Why are you only worried about the violation of Shabbat? So what Avram concludes from this is, Eruv Otsa. Eruv, as Rashi says, is Kedei Naspa, is just dragged along. Eruv is a din derabonon. Talking about Eruv Hatzerot, according to Rashi, Otsa is the main thing we're focused on. Otsa on Shabbat exists, the Yisro Otsa. The Yisro Otsa does not exist on Yom HaKippurim. Therefore, when the Torah tells me that I can violate something to carry out the Seir Azazel, that's only I can violate Shabbat. I don't need anything to tell me I can violate Yom Kippur because I'm not in violation of Yom Kippur when I carry the animal because there's no Easter Hotza'ah by Yom HaKippurim. And Erev Chatzirot, as Rashi says, is a derivative of Hotza'ah. The reason we do Erev Chatzirot is so people don't make mistakes and carry from one location to the other. So Gemara here says Erev Hotza'ah is relevant by Shabbat. It's not relevant by Yom HaKippurim. In other Gemaras, in Kretut and other places, the Gemara says that Rav Ram's conclusion is Beduta, it's a joke. Because the mitzvah here is a mitzvah of Yom HaKippurim. So you could argue that the violation of Yom Kippur is built into the taking of the Seir out to the Tzok. When it comes to Shabbat, they don't have to clash. So who says that there's granted permission to override Shabbat with regards to Avodah of Yom HaKippurim? I have to have a specific dispensation by Shabbat that I wouldn't need by Yom HaKippurim necessarily. Now Fred points out, which is the halacha, which is that we say by Yom HaKippurim that it's a Shabbat, Shabbaton, that it has the same status as Shabbat, and there is an Isser Otzah on Yom HaKippurim like there is on Shabbat. This is not the way that we pass in the halacha, but Rav Ram is trying to prove from here that maybe there should be such a differentiation. Okay, so now it says, Iti v'afilu b'tumah, Iti, like we use the word Mo'ado to say Mo'ado afilu b'shabbat, Mo'ado afilu b'tumah. Here we use the word Iti to say afilu b'tumah l'may hilchuto. What halacha are we worried about in terms of Tumah? Because it's outside the Mikdash, and this is not Kodoshim in the classic sense. If it becomes Tameh, what's the problem? You're tossing it off a cliff, it's not going on the Mizbeach. So Tumah here should not be a relevant issue. Even if it is Tameh, the person who's taking matters Tameh, why is that relevant? Why do you have to override Tumah? Because Tumah is not an issue at all here. So it says, Amar Shish Lamar, Shim Nitmah Mishalcho. If the person who's taking the Seir Lazel out, nichnas tamei lazara u'mishalcho, he goes to pick it up inside the Azara and takes it out. So there's where you have the violation of Tumah, which is you're not allowed to go into the Mikdash when you are tamei. So despite the fact that the person who is designated to do the Shiluach and take him out to the cliff is tamei, we don't say go get a replacement. We say you can go into the Azara and get it from the Kohen Gadol and take it out. But that's what it means, it overrides Tumah. Right, shalu et Rabbi Eliezer. They asked Rabbi Eliezer. If the animal becomes sick, can you carry it on your shoulders? The animal can carry me and you. What are you worried about carrying it? The person who's taking it out, if he becomes ill, what's the din? That he can send it with someone else. Can you bring in a replacement? We just said before that ish iti, he said he has to be designated from beforehand. He has to be picked on the Erev Yom Kippur. What happens if he falls ill? And now he can't take it. Can you replace him with someone else? They says, hey, b'shalom, ani v'atem. You and I should be at peace with this. It's okay. Dachafo v'lo meit. If he pushes it off the cliff and it doesn't die, ma'u she'ireid acharav v'emitenu. Should he chase it down the cliff and make sure that it is dead? Amar lehem, from this week's Haftorah that we just read, ken yovdu kol evech Hashem. It's the end of Shirat Devorah. So too, Hashem, all your enemies should be destroyed. All right, what we have here is a number of questions to Rabbi Eliezer, none of which he answers. He is circumspect in all of his answers here. Question is why? He said nothing. That's what happened here. He said nothing in all these cases. He didn't answer the question. So Chamim tell us, if he's sick, you can carry him. If the sender falls ill, it's not makev, you can send it with someone else. If he pushes off the cliff and it doesn't die, he's going after it, v'yomiteno. So you better get it right the first time, otherwise he's going down the cliff to get it. So now, we're going to have another series of questions with Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara will only come back at the end and tell us what's going on here. I'll give you the preview, which is that Rabbi Eliezer would not say anything overt that he did not hear from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan. He would only say things that he heard from his Rebbe. So even though he knew the answers to these questions, he tried to avoid answering the questions by pushing people away. And because of that, you're going to see we just had a series of questions where he didn't answer any of the questions. Everything they said, he answered in some strange way that didn't really answer the question. And now we're going to go through another series of questions where they're asking him something, and he does not answer the question. It's all for the same reason, and the Gemara then wraps it up and says it's for this reason. So next series is Shalu et Rabbi Eliezer, Ploni, Mahu, the Olam Haba. So-and-so, is he the Olam Haba? Now, if you're just asking generically, it's a little strange question. They point to some guy out in the shuk and they say, is he going to Olam Haba? I don't know if that's a great question. It's Amar Lehu. He said to them, Lo Shaltuni El Aploni. Why aren't you asking about so-and-so? So now he's again pushing them away. They're asking about one and then he answers the other. The girsa here is unclear. You can see the Bach changes the gira so a little bit, makes it a little easier to read. If you go to Aleph and Bet in the Bach, he says, Uploni Malu De Olam Haba. Amalem, Lo Shaltuni Ela Aploni. Ask me about this other person. Ma'u Latzil Akivsa Minari. Can you save a lamb from the lion? Lamb, Lo Shaltuni Ela Roeh. Why are you asking me about the lamb? Can you save the shepherd? So Ma'u Latzil Roeh Minari. Okay. Can you save the Roeh, the shepherd, from the lion? Lamb, Lo Shaltuni Ela Akivsa. Why aren't you asking me about the lamb? Then he says, Mamzer Mahu Li Rosh. Can an Mamzer inherit? Ma'u Li Abeim. Can he perform Yibum? Ma'u Lasud Et Beito. Ma'u Lasud Et Kivro. So Ma'olosu de Beito, Rashi claims is, are you allowed to whitewash your house, Bizmanazeh? Because after the Churban, there's a requirement not to whitewash your house after the Churban, Zecher, the Churban. That's the idea of leaving the Amah by an Amah square in the house that is unfinished or not whitewashed. Zecher the Churban. Can you whitewash the kever? Question here about what that means. Whitewashing the kafarim was done in their day to delineate tumah, so people would know that this is an area of tumah and that people would not to go there. What exactly their question is to him about Maui Yisod Beito, the Bach says, V'lo mariyacha b'shvichat tzid ala kever l'shem tziyun. Not talking about pouring the whitewash on the kever to delineate the kever. And therefore he says, talking about putting the whitewash on there for kavod. Rashi's explanation over here makes no sense. The way the Bach reads it is that, that all of these things are referencing back to the mamzer. Rashi cuts off the questions about the mamzer from mamzer ma'uli yaresh, can he inherit, and ma'uli yabeim, stop. And then the next two questions are independent questions. The way the Bach reads it is those two questions connect to the mamzer. Ma'uli yasodet beito, can he whitewash his house? Meaning, should he be in aveilut? Should he have a dark outlook on life because of his standing? And therefore he shouldn't whitewash his house because that's a sign of simcha. Ma'uli yasodet kivro is not for tumah, but rather like putting on a monument or a tombstone. Do you put on a tombstone for someone who's not kasher? That's the question here. Do you keep low-key and you just have a burial there, or he gets the full honors of burial? So that's the way the Bach reads it. As far as the first questions are concerned, the Rabbeinu Hanano gives us some insight over here. Rashi mentions a little bit of it, but the Rabbeinu Hanano is much more extensive, which he says, Shalu et Rabbi Lezer Avshalom Shaba al Pilig She Aviv Ma'ulu Olam Abba. The first question was about Avshalom. Ploni is not just Ploni, but Avshalom. Does he get to Olam Abba because he slept with his father's Pilug Sholt? What does that question revolve around? It's a machloket in the Gemara in Sanhedrin as to how you marry a Pilegesh. Do Pilegesh have Kiddushin and Ketubah? Or do they not have Kiddushim and Tuba? What's the marital status of a Pilegesh? So that will make a difference as to whether he was in violation of Ishet Ish or Ishet Av when he slept with them, or he simply was in violation of taking a Pilegesh, which is an Isur Lav. So that will make a difference about whether he's a Ben Olam Abba. He didn't answer, obviously. Then the next thing the person asks him about Shlomo. Is Shlomo ben Olam Abba? Shlomo, Melech it says, at the end of his life, his heart was not whole with Hashem like his father David. You can read that in one of two ways. He wasn't as good as his father, but he was still good. Or he wasn't as good as his father because he was doing wrong. Which of those two is it? Again, that's a machloket about whether Shlomo Melech was choteh at the end of his life with the Avodah Zarah that creeps up in Malchut Israel. Is he the one responsible for that? Is he the one held accountable? And is it his Avodah Zarah? Or do they somehow remove that from him and ascribe it to other individuals? Then, Ma'ula Atzilat Kibsa, Lamar Batsheva Miyad David. Are you allowed to save Batsheva from David? David is about to sleep with an Ishet Ish. She's married to Uriah Chiti. David's going to sleep her. Can you save Batsheva? Or there's no need to save her. That revolves around a question also, whether those that battled on behalf of David, when they went out to battle, did they give a get to their wives before they left? They wouldn't leave them as Agunot or Amunot afterwards. They used to divorce them before they left because of that issue. So if she's really divorced, then she's not an Eshadish. If she isn't divorced, then she is an Eshadish. So can you save her? And he put back the question. He says back to him, why don't you ask me about Uriah Chiti? Are you allowed to save Uriah Chiti from David HaMelech? Are you allowed to seal the Ro'eh? The Ro'eh being the shepherd from the Ari, from the lion being David. So first the Kivsa, which is Batseva, and then the Ro'eh, who is Uriah Chiti, her husband. Are you allowed to save Uriah Chiti from David's actions? Because there again, the Gemara talks about whether David was justified in killing Uriah Chiti, because when he comes to David HaMelech, he says to him, Adoni Yoav. He calls Yoav his master in front of the king. And obviously the king is the master of Yoav. So is that an affront to the king, where it's called Morid B'machut, that he is lacking deference to the king, and therefore is deserving of death, because he calls Yoav a master in front of the king? Or is that considered to be okay? You can call the king's servants master, because in vis-a-vis you, he's a master. But he's not necessarily an affront to the king, he's the king's general. So that's not an offense to the king. That's also the Gemara discusses. So those are the questions being raised over here, that are being posed to Rabbi Eliezer. And in each case, he doesn't answer them. Every time they ask him a question, he throws the question back at them. Or when they ask him the next question, he just rolls. He keeps rolling and rolling with them. Now, the answer here, the Gemara explains what's happening here. Not because he's just trying to send them off with these silly ideas or not provide them with answers. He would never say anything over that he didn't hear from his Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore he was reticent to answer these questions, even though he knew the answer. That's what the Gemara is making the point. It's not that he didn't know the answer. It's not that he lacked the knowledge. He just wouldn't say anything. He didn't hear from his Rebbe. Shala isha chachmat Rabbi Eliezer. We have another incident like this where a wise woman asked Rabbi Eliezer, mechash maseh egel shavin, because the maseh egel, everybody worshipped the egel, is all equal. Mipnei amayin mitatan shaveh. How come they don't all die the same way? For the maseh egel, we have different deaths. We have deaths by the sword. We have death by the magifa, and we have death by the drinking of the waters that Moshe creates from the crushed eagle. So how come I have three different punishments of everybody who just worshiped the eagle? It's all the same. We don't see any differentiation there. Amrallah in Chokhmah Lishar Lebepelach says that wisdom of the woman is only found with the spindle, sewing, weaving, or spinning. Chenu Omer, and it says by the Mishkan, Chol Isha Chokhmah Lev Biadeh Tavu. All the wise women had understanding. They tavu, spun or they wove. Here, it's not used in a derogatory sense. He's, again, doing the same thing that Rabbi Eliezer does everywhere, which is he won't answer the question. Moves her off topic to something else completely. Here, the terminology here about the isha, over time, developed into more of a derogatory statement, which is that women should be with the sewing and the weaving and not get involved in these issues. Again, over here, I don't think it's said in that context. I don't think it's said in that derogatory fashion. It's said in a manner of just distraction or to move off topic, not to put the woman down in any way. Later on, we find it, for instance, by the Drisha, the Prisha commentary on the Torah. His wife has a strong opinion about the Neirot on Yom Tov, lighting the Neirot on Yom Tov, and when you should make the bracha when you light Neirot on Yom Tov. She has an opinion about a number of these items. Her son, who writes the Perush of his father, the Prisha and Drisha, he writes in the introduction to that, he writes about his mother as well, how she was a unbelievable woman, Talmidei Chachama, she was involved at their table in the halachic discussions, and he quotes from his mother these two issues about lighting candles on Yom Tov, when to light them, and certain other minhagim that she had. And she actually becomes the pivotal discussion in this issue of Yom Tov and lighting candles on Yom Tov. She's the first to raise the issue, and everybody after her is basically arguing whether she's right or not right. The Magen Avraham, in commenting on her statement, says, "In chokhmah l'isha lebepelach." He quotes this, but there he's saying it in that way, which is it's a slight in that sense, that why she involved in halacha, she's wrong about this. And then afterwards, you have the Gro and others coming to her defense against the Magen Avraham. But it's an interesting, in that context, it's not used in as nice a fashion as it's used here. Here, I think it's neutral. Rav Levi, now the Gemara answers the question. Why were there three different types of deaths by the Ego? It's not that we don't have an answer, but it's a machloket Rav and Levi. Chadamar, Zveach Vikiter, someone who really worshipped the Avodah Zarah, he offered Ketoret, offered Korbanot, Besayif, death by the sword. Difef v'nishek, if he hugged and kissed it, he showed adoration, he showed a certain amount of deference to it. Then mimita, he died in the magifa, I should probably read magifa here. Samach bilvavo, if he was just happy about what was going on, be'adroken. Then he died by adroken, which is some sort of stomach ailment or intestinal ailment, and that's from drinking the waters that Moshe gave. That's the way one of them explained it. V'charamar, this is the more famous because Rashi quotes this opinion in Chumash, which is edim v'atra'a v'saif. They worshipped with witnesses and with a warning, then they get the punishment of beitin, death by beitin, saif. Edim below hatra, they're witnesses to them worshiping, but no warning. Bemita, they die in the magifa. Lo edim below hatra, none of the above. Badroken, then they drink the water and they're punished in that way. The three different punishments are associated with the evidence that we have here. Now, in terms of avodah zarah, the punishment for avodah zarah is skila in the Torah. So Rashi explains over here why they killed them by sayif is because they had yet to have those dinim clarified. This happens right at Har Sinai. They know that there's a death penalty for worshiping Avodah Zarah, but they don't know what the death penalty is. So they use the standard death penalty that goes for B'nai Noach. The standard death penalty is Saif, is by the sword. That's the default, unless I know otherwise. And so they get Saif, until we knew that they get Skila, when they know that later on. Rav Yehuda. Shifto shel Levi lo avad avodat kochavim. Or Kol Shevet Levi lo avad avodat kochavim. The entire Shevet Levi did not participate in the worshiping of the Egel. Shenamar. Because it says, Ve'yamod Moshe b'shar ha'machaneh, and of course we're missing the most important part of the quote that tells you this, which is the remainder of what it said there. Vayomer mi la'Hashem elai, says, who's to Hashem to me? V'yasvoy lav, kol b'nei Levi. So that shows on the word kol. Kol b'nei Levi, all of the Levim came. So that's why he says that none of Shevet Levi worshipped Avodah Zarah, because it says Kol Ben Levi came to Moshe when he calls out Mil Hashem Eli. Yativ Ravina veikamar laHashemai Tato. Ravina was saying over this memra that he had from Rabbi Yehuda. Eish b'nei Rav Papa bar Abba the Ravina. So then the children of Papa challenged Ravina in this. Doesn't it say in Zota Bracha with regards to the Bracha of Levi? Homer laviv ulimo loritif said about his parents, I don't know you. That makes it sound like when they went to defend against the Egel, that they had to disregard family connections, because it means that family was involved in the Egel. Well, family's involved in the Egel, then you have a problem here, because that means Shevet Levi was involved in the Egel. It's not cult, it's not all of them. So the says, no, you got it wrong. Aviv is avimo. Father is his father-in-law. It's the Levi's father-in-law. His wife was a Israelite. So therefore, his father-in-law was Israel. And then it says, "Et echav lo yikir v'et banav lo yadat." Echav is echav mi'imo, mi'Israel. He has a brother through his mother, who is a Israelite, a half-brother. And banav is b'nei bito, mi'Israel. That's his grandson through his daughter, who is a Israelite. The grandchild is Israel, even though it's the grandchild of the Levi. So Gemara comes up with a way to solve that problem, that Kol b'nei Levi were not involved, that any familial relationship that we're talking about that got involved in the ego were all from the outside of Shevet B'nai Levi. They're all mixed marriages where there's a Levi in Israel somehow, and because of that, they have relatives that are Israelim and not Levim. Kivish Asulo, they made a ramp out. Amar Rabba Barchana, lo Babliim hayu Alexandrium. The people who were causing the problem here were not Babylonians, but rather those people from Alexandria. Alexandria, we've spoken about this in the past, was a major city. It was a major Jewish city. Probably was the largest Jewish city at the time. Alexandria Mitzrayim, extremely wealthy and heavily populated city. The connections between them are significant. We read this before. We read this in Josephus. I did earlier in the Masechta, how they petition on behalf of the Jews around the Roman Empire to get them rights and to allow them to worship freely. And that they're very involved, the Alexandrians, in the Roman politics. And they also help out the people in Eretz Yisrael a lot, as well as the Mikdash. We know that many of the things donated to the Mikdash come from Alexandria Mitzrayim, including the Sharei Nicanor, which he brings up from the craftsmen in Alexandria Mitzrayim. So, mitoch shesonim et Bablim, but because the Jews in Israel had a tremendous dislike for the Babylonians, hayu korim otam al shman. Anybody who was bad was called a Babylonian. So even though, truthfully, they were Alexandrian, these people that were acting in this way, nevertheless, anybody who acted inappropriately was called a Babylonian because of their tremendous dislike for the Babylonians. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo Babliim hayu, Alexandrium. Here we have a bright that says, Rabbi Yehuda says they were not actually Babylonians, but rather those from Alexandria. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, tanuach datcha, shenachta dati. You should be made to be at peace, because you just put me at ease. Because Rabbi Yossi's family was from Bavel. And so Rabbi Yossi felt awkward about this fact that they were calling them Bavliim and that they acted in this way. There was a little bit of a black mark on his family that came from Bavel. So after Rabbi Yehuda says that they really weren't Babylonians, but rather Alexandrian, he felt better about that, because then it wasn't something that was a slight in terms of the Babylonians, even though they still hated the Babylonians, and that's why they were calling it that. Tov etzei, Tana, what do they used to say? Ma shoy tzvira dein, v'chove dara sagiin. So they say, why are you tarrying? Shahi, shihiya, means to tarry, to delay. Tzvira dein, this sa'ir. Why are you tarrying with this sa'ir? V'chove dara sagiin. The sins of the generation are great. Basically, they're saying, get the sins out of here. What are you doing? Why are you taking so much time? They were trying to push him along to get the sins out. I'm going to just do the Mishnah, and then we'll do the Gemara tomorrow. Miyaki rei Yushalayim ayu malavim oto ad sukkah rishona. So the elders, or the significant individuals, important individuals in Yerushalayim, used to accompany him from the Mikdash out to the first Sukkah. Eser Sukkot Yerushalayim at Tzok. There were 10 tents along the way from Yerushalayim to the Tzok. As Rashi says, they set them up on Erev Yom HaKippurim. Before Yom Kippur, they set up these tents. Tishim Ris. The distance, the total was 90 Ris. Shiva Umechsa the whole meal. There's 7.5 Ris to every meal. Meal is 2,000 amot. Every meal has 7.5 ris in it. So if I have 90 ris divided by 7.5, that means 12 meal. That means from the Mikdash out to the cliff is 12 meal. So then we have a division of 10 sukkot. So the way it works is you have actually 11 spaces. If you have 10 items, you have 11 spaces. First gap of space between the Mikdash and the first sukkah. Then you have 9 between the 10 sukkot. And then you have number 11, which is from the last sukkah to the cliff. So if I divide up the 12 meal between the 11 spaces, That means that each one of them is a meal, and one of those gaps, which is the last one, from the last tent to the cliff, is 2 meal. That's how I get the 12 meal in total of distance. Now the reason for that is this. Every tent that he got to, they offered him food and water. The Gemara will discuss this about the fact that it is Yom HaKippurim. So why are they offering him food and water? The answer is that he is allowed to eat and drink if that was necessary. The Gemara says nobody ever drank or ate, but it's pat pisalo. Tell someone they can eat and drink, they don't need to eat and drink. If you tell them they can't eat and drink, they do need to eat and drink. It's the psychological effect of, it's called pat pisalo. Umelavim oto misuka lusuka. They accompany him from sukkah to sukkah. That's why they're only 2,000 amot apart, because that's tchum. Tchum is 2,000 amot. So in order to facilitate the ability of those people in the tents to take him or accompany him, they were 2,000 amot apart, so they could take him to the next individual, drop him off, and then so on and so forth, except for the last tent. The last tent is 4,000 amot away from the cliff. So the person who can be melaveim can only go 2,000 amot and had to stop at the halfway point, and then let him go as alone to the end. He can't reach the tzok because it's 4,000 amot away. He's doing what the Avodah on Yom Kippur, but the individual else, it's all the Rabbanan. I mean, Tchum is only the Rabbanan, but the Rabbanan did not impose upon him here. El Omeid Mirachok Vroet Masav. He stands from afar and watches him do what he has to do. Umahayase. What did he do when he got to the cliff? Cholek Lashon Shel Zohorit. He splits this string of crimson. Katsio Kashur Besela. Ties half around the rock up above. Katsio Kashur Ben Shnei Karnav. And he ties the other half between the horns. Tomorrow we'll discuss how this developed. V'dachafo le'ochurab. And then he pushes it off backwards off the cliff. V'hu mitgalgel v'yoreid. And it bounces down and goes down. V'lo yam magia l'chatzi ahar. Ashnasei verim verim. It never got halfway down the cliff and it was already in pieces. Ba v'yashav lo tachat sukkah achrona achetachshach. He's allowed to return to the last of the sukkot. Despite the fact that we know the din is that somebody goes out of tchum, even birshut is not allowed to come back. Once you go out, you're stuck. Here, the Chachamim gave him the dispensation because he's fasting. Because he's fasting and he's weak, he doesn't want to be out in the midbar, aside from the fact that he just doesn't want to be out in the midbar when it's nightfall, all alone at the edge of the cliff. So they allowed him to come back to the last tent. When does his begadim become tameh? That the Torah tells us when the Ishiti takes him out, he does the Shliach Azazel, says whoever takes him out, that his clothing becomes tameh. What's the trigger for his clothing to become tameh? It says, he becomes tameh, his begadim become tameh, it's gzeret hakatuv, that whoever takes it out. But where's that trigger point? Where is it that he's called the sholeach, that his begadim become tameh? That is, mishiyatza chutz tuchumat Yerushalayim. Tanakam says, as soon as he leaves the walls of Yerushalayim, that's already considered to be the sholeach. And he is tamei and his begadim is tamei. Rabbi Shimon Omer, b'shad chiyato letzuk. He pushes the azazel off the suk. That is when his begadim come tamei. When he accomplishes that piece, finishes what he's supposed to do, that's when he becomes tamei. Okay, we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.